This week on the Famicom Dojo podcast, a clip show, but a show with clips you've never heard before. I promise. We have the numbers. Sometimes it seems like there's a weird jump in a podcast topic. Other times you might not notice at all. No, it's not a glitch of the Matrix, but it's a sure sign of an audio bonus. Most of the time, these clips are excised from an episode edited down for time, but on at least one occasion we've recorded a special side topic completely separately. These audio bonuses are released exclusively to the website, in an attempt to get people to go there, read the show notes, etc. But in actual practice, listeners tend not to download them unless they're part of the feed. So we're compiling our favorites for this special episode. So if you want to skip this episode and go to our website at famicomdojo.tv, listen to the audio bonuses directly on the page for episodes 27, 41, 51, and 85, we won't stop you. No? Didn't think so. First up is our audio bonus Color Dreams for episode 41 Video Game Babies, released on February 24th, 2012. This is the first podcast we recorded after my first son was born, so it was all about video game babies. When we got to the subject of Color Dreams, the off-the-wall licensed third-party NES developer responsible for all those Bible games, we couldn't include all the information in the main show, but it's a fascinating topic.
All right, it's burning up inside me. I gotta tell you what happened to Color Dreams.
Oh yeah, tell me.
Okay, so Color Dreams was releasing all these games. One of the games they released was weird. It was called Menace Beach.
Okay, like and Venice Beach.
It was a game where you'd be playing the game. You were like, I don't know, a skateboarding punk kind of guy beating up people, and strangely enough, like if you like did well in the game. There was this girl in the game, like this your girlfriend or something, that would like get more and more undressed as the game went on.
What? Okay.
Well, like, because I don't know, she was like kidnapped by evil people who were like slowly like taking off her clothes or something.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it wasn't super explicit, but in the end, it was just her and her underwear.
Right.
Okay, that game came out in like 1990, which is. You know, pretty. And it was... So Color Dreams released a lot of games. And of course, Nintendo would never allowed it with its content things, which right. is the subject of an upcoming podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
Just want to link that there. But Color Dreams wasn't making enough money off of their games. And they decided... well, first they started another company called Bunch Games, and they released a few games there. But they actually got... famous when they switched their name again to do you know where I'm going with this?
I have no idea.
They were Wisdom Tree.
Wait.
They made yeah.
Really?
They made all those Christian games, yeah.
How so they were pandering? They weren't even like, you know, like true believers started this thing to bring God to the video gaming culture. They just wanted to find a niche.
Well, I mean, I bet some of them were actually Christian. Probably not the ones who worked on Menace Beach. I would think that at least some of the higher ups had a reason for it. But yeah, it did seem a lot like pandering. And they released Bible Adventures, Bible Buffet, Exodus, Joshua, King of Kings, Spiritual Warfare, and their last Nintendo game.
No.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
Is it a Baby Jesus game?
No, it's not. It's not. Although one of the games had Baby Jesus thing in it, actually.
Okay.
Baby Moses, actually. You had to protect him.
It was in
Bible Adventures.
Right.
Bible Adventures. You protected Baby Moses.
Isn't that technically like the Torah Adventures? I don't know. Probably sounds too Jewish.
Quiet. It's old school Old Testament.
I suppose. Old school action. So that guy is only one bit.
Last go. Wow. One bit. Just the zeros. Okay. Anyway, the last game they released for the NES actually turned out to be one of the last games ever released on the NES.
Oh dear, okay.
And the game was called Sunday Funday.
Okay.
And it was released in 1995.
Oh, right at the tail end of the NES's lifespan. Wow, yeah.
Tail end of the NES's lifespan, nothing. Tail end of the Super Nintendo's lifespan.
Oh, good point.
95, good point. Saturn was out, PlayStation was out.
That was 1 year before the N64.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, well, same year if you go by Japanese. But anyway, so, like, it was, like, the last... Like, other companies had stopped pretty much at 93 releasing any Nintendo mm-hmm. cartridges.
Right.
And, of course, it wasn't an official cart because Nintendo... Again, religious themes in video games could not be officially licensed by Nintendo.
Right, by right. Nintendo.
But... So here's what Sunday Fun Day is. It is Menace Beach.
It was what?
It was a ROM hack of Menace Beach.
Oh, what?
So instead of like beating up the bullies, you're avoiding them because they're trying to prevent you from going to Sunday school.
Wow.
And instead of a girl getting gradually more naked. It was replaced with a different image of a Sunday school teacher, same face. And no, she doesn't get naked. No. They put up Bible verses. It's like, we got this game. No one bought it when we released it originally. Let's just use it again 5 years later, with a fresh coat of Bible.
Wow. Okay.
It's not the only time they did that.
I guess not.
They released one more game. This is going to blow your mind. It's the only unlicensed SNES game.
Okay.
Because SNES was so much harder to crack than the Nintendo.
Right.
Like, no one was able to reverse engineer a cartridge, including these guys. They were not able to. So to play this game, you had to put a real cartridge in the slot on top of it.
Ah!
Like a Game Genie. Like a Game Genie.
I think I've heard of this, actually. Yeah.
It needed to get the copy protection from the game on top. And the game was called Super 3D Noah's Ark. Now, if Sunday is Funday, taking Menace Beach is kind of funny. Do you know what engine this used? Do you know what this was a hack of?
No.
Wolfenstein.
Come on, everybody.
The legend goes, I don't know how accurate this is, but the legend goes that the people at id Software were so upset with the slaughtered version of Wolfenstein that was on the NES, Super NES.
Yeah.
They had to remove the Nazis and they had to remove the blood, and it was so
right.
They were like, well, it might as well just be a Christian game. And Wisdom Tree went, can we make it into a Christian game? So it's the same engine. It's exactly the same engine. In fact, many of the rooms look the same. But instead of Nazis, there's animals who need to be fed. And instead of guns, you have a slingshot that shoots fruit.
Wow.
You have to feed the animals on Noah's Ark.
That's incredible.
It was Wisdom Tree's last game.
Thank
it
God.
It was the only unlicensed Super Nintendo game ever released. Officially, you know.
Yeah.
Officially unlicensed, I guess, is kind of strange to say. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just amazing. You take, like, games that the target audience would never buy for their kids. You know?
Wow.
Do a little sprite hack and release... Yeah.
I want to track this game down now.
You should try.
This is incredible.
You should really try. It would be like releasing Sesame Street games that use the Leisure Suit Larry engine or something, you know? Just,
that's insane.
You know, but so Color Dreams. and the which became Wisdom Tree and now doesn't really exist. But that's their incredible history.
Wow. Okay.
Our next audio bonus is Silent Hill from episode 51, Added Content, released June 22nd, 2012. This is one of my favorite episodes of the entire podcast. It's a result of the DLC that was bought for this show, including a Silent Hill movie review with Syndra, which fulfilled two DLC requests in one. The show notes are excellent for this one, elaborating on the Infocom feelies and Scratch and Sniff Leisure Suit Larry card and Love for Sale. So in some excerpts, you'll hear me refer to scratching off the card, and that's what I was talking about. You should just listen to the episode. It's really, really good. In this audio bonus, Vink and Syndra bond over their love of the Silent Hill games while I tried to find my notes for the movie review.
That's really bad. I should have been.
That is really bad. This is what should be recorded, Sean.
I'm so sorry. All right.
Press play and let's go at it.
Quick pause. I got to grab my notes because I took a lot of them. Hold on. I'm going to keep recording. I had a lot to say. I'm just saying.
It is all in my head, and that's the scary part. Like I could go on and talk on this podcast for like 3 hours with no prep. That's
when it comes to this particular topic. Oh, I could go on for at least an hour just about the movie, and then there are the games that it's based on, and that's a whole nother tangent, and so on and so forth.
Yep. Is Sean back yet?
I have no idea. I'm actually supposed to be getting a copy of the soundtrack for Silent Hill Downpour. I'm doing music reviews for a site called Original Sound Version now, and the perk is that I get freebies, like free soundtracks.
Oh, that's games. Nice. Did you play the Silent Hill Shattered Memories game?
I didn't play any of it personally. I saw some gameplay, and I watched over a friend's shoulder when he played a bit of it. And it had some interesting concepts to it.
Yeah.
Like, the psychological part of things, you know, your actions, your psychological profile, so on and so forth, kind of give you what happens in the game. And then the ice world was interesting, too, but the story... What ended up being, you know, the big climax, quote-unquote, in the whole story, it really was not nearly as interesting as, like, the first couple Silent Hill games.
Yeah.
And I think it was just kind of a cop-out, to be perfectly honest, but...
I think they tried something new and it didn't totally work. They tried something very interesting, the whole no-combat thing.
That's true, and they kind of imported that into Downpour, you know, the...
Yeah.
And to be honest, most Silent Hill games, or at least the ones that I've played, you know, the at least early on, the idea of either of fight or flight, the flight part came in handy for me quite often because, let's face it, if you've got low health and all you have is a pipe to, you know, beat off like 5-6 enemies coming at you at once, you want to run the hell away from that crap.
Well, combat was never strong in games like that, you know. The only thing since they didn't have the combat, it took out a lot some of the danger parts of the game. I mean, you had to run, you had to flee, but for the most part, like, they were limited just to certain moments. So it got like the atmosphere in the game was really, really good. Like how the story kind of unraveled through like little things. I thought it was well thought out, but I don't know. I don't know how it worked as a game.
And like I said, I there were some good concepts, you know, that they kind of wove into it that made it interesting in some respects.
Yeah.
But overall, the like I said, the climax was disappointing to me, and you know, the no combat was one of the interesting concepts, but again, I like the idea of fight or flight. You know, you are a normal person with instincts. Running away, not always going to be, you know, the best option. Sometimes the best option is beat whatever monster is in front of you over the head with a lead pipe. Mm. So.
Sean, come
back. I'm back.
Okay.
So, all right, we'll talk about Silent Hill, but before we do, I need to scratch up number 5 here.
Okay.
My last thoughts are, even though I didn't enjoy it very much as cinema, I thought it was a really gorgeous film. Like, special effects at this point are just so ubiquitous that it's more noticeable when they're bad than when they're like really convincing, and I was convinced every step of the way here. Yeah. Although the sword pyramid head sword coming through that door was a little weird.
And, oh, the great knife, yeah.
Yeah, and I have no idea how Sybil, who is the cop, the bottle blonde cop, by the way, mm-hmm. Sybil, I don't know how she survived that beating she received at the hands of those cronies. Yeah. Because I thought she was dead, but you know they just wanted to boil her face off. So,
And if you kind of hear at the end, you can kind of hear
this
as
is not for you.
Away, yeah, taking her away from the fire, you can kind of hear her gasping her last breaths, which I thought was like, oh okay. My god, they're really driving that home, aren't they?
They sure. Oh god, yeah. And the barbed wire. Well, anyway. Apart from that, it was really like the opening scenes in the movie are really, really gorgeous, especially when they're on their way to Silent Hill. There's like this nice, super duper wide shots, mm-hmm. especially when she's like taking like a different fork in the road and stuff. That I don't know, something about that seems video gamey to me, but also incredibly cinematic. And right. I had never seen stuff like that in a movie before. So, you know, hats off to doing things artfully, even if I thought that it was lacking in story thrust and characterization and dialogue.
Yeah. Christoph Gans, he definitely did well with making, at least if nothing else, the cinema or the scenery and the atmosphere of the movie was perfectly reflective of the games.
He's
and
French, right? I have seen this before. Other French films. Was it him or someone else? Who did The Children of Earth? Darn it. The same guy who like directed Alien Resurrection. Anyway, French filmmakers had that same aesthetic. That's all I'm going to say.
Right. The movie, it did well. It did fantastic in certain parts. The costumes, the monster costumes and outfits, the atmosphere and the careful layout of the town to be shot for shot, exactly like the games, the locales, the transitions was very faithful to the games. Mm. And that's why I kind of, in most cases, I will put the Silent Hill movie as my second favorite video game based movie.
Wow.
Simply because I can't not absolutely adore the first Mortal Kombat movie.
Well,
because
right.
It was like my first real exposure to a video game in cinema form, even before the Super Mario Brothers movie, which, you know, ended up being terribly campy anyway, so.
Right, yeah. For more on those movies, I'll go back to episode 7, which we'll link in the show notes, about what Vink and I thought of those films. And yeah, I think we both agree that Mortal Kombat was definitely
awesome faithful film. To the games, but awesome. It had enough differences to inject enough, you know, of its own, you know, entity into the game, into the movies and all that. So, that is my cue to fly away. I'm sorry. Right. I am needed elsewhere.
Okay.
Syndra away.
So for the listeners at home, I should make a correction that City of Lost Children is the movie I was thinking of. And the director for that and Alien Resurrection was Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Jeunet. That sounds right, doesn't it?
Sure, we'll go with that.
Yeah. So before we get to the end of the show here, let's scratch off number 8. It's yellow, by the way.
Our next audio bonus was fairly recent. Superman Movie Reboots for episode 85, Reboots vs. Remakes, released February 14th, 2014. It was our Valentine's Day episode that had nothing to do with Valentine's Day. We got way off topic about movie remakes, especially with all the Man of Steel 2 news coming out, and went on a tangent about the history of Superman in film.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way about movies. Like, you watch and, like, every comedy movie now is like a remake of a 70s television series or something, or an 80s television series. And it'd be like, I don't know, and they reboot series that aren't even old. You know what I mean?
Spider-Man.
In my mind, Spider-Man is still a new series.
Oh, it's like 12 years old at this point. 13, maybe?
I guess. That still seems pretty new to me.
But it was like the vanguard of the new superhero action film. There's some things that have happened since then, and like the dozens that have been made in the meantime, that it looks kind of dated. Because like that movie like paid homage to the original Superman film, which is pushing almost 40 years old by this point.
Yeah.
35, around there.
Was it a 70s movie? The first
78.
Really?
1 year after Star Wars.
Yes, I saw it when I was like 5 and figured it was a new movie because I was 5.
No, the only ones that were made in the 80s were 3 and 4.
4 was bad.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just my memory of it.
No, it's actually legitimately bad.
Which is the movie, was it 3 or 2, that there's like part where Superman is like fighting and someone's launching missiles and it looks like a video game?
That's probably 4. Wait, it looks like a video game. I don't know about that, but like he rounds up all the nuclear weapons in the planet and throws them into the sun in 4.
Well, that was, oh gosh, I don't remember. In my mind, and I worry now that this might not have been Superman. This might have been an episode of Saturday Night Live because I was young, you know. But in my mind, Richard Pryor is playing a video game, but he's in the video, but he's shooting.
I had to say it was Richard Pryor. That's definitely Superman 3.
Oh, he really was in that. Oh, good.
Roger Ebert? Someone described that movie as being Richard Pryor trying to escape a Superman film.
Yeah, this. You know, I haven't watched any Superman film past the age when I was 10. So, I really should, or shouldn't I?
Well, the first one holds up, I think. The second one, the Richard Donner cut, exists, and I have a whole video about it. It's like my first proper Powit video that I ever did, and it was my most popular one until the first episode of Famicom Dojo eventually surpassed it, I think, like last year. So it took 6 years. But, yeah, 2 has some really weird, silly things in it, and then it just gets worse from there.
Okay, but anyway, the Superman, when that got its reboot, hasn't it had like 2 reboots this decade?
Not this decade, but they were within 10 years of each other.
Okay, because yeah, we got the Christopher Reeves ones, which were late 70s, early 80s. And what was the next one?
Superman Returns was in 2006, which was supposed to be like basically to replace Superman 3, essentially.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't supposed to be a reboot. That was a continuation.
Yeah. It kind of ignored the latter two films.
So did the box office. Okay.
It actually did really, really well compared to other Superman films, but people were just really harsh on it. And then, so we got Man of Steel last year.
Okay. So,
and now we're getting, oh, the casting news, by the way, I guess, Jesse Eisenberg. Okay. Yeah. So, casting update, they've been putting together the Superman Batman film, for a while now. And they've, announced like Gal Gadot as, Wonder Woman, who's this like, you know, skinny supermodel. So everyone's like, she can't play an Amazon. And you know, the fact it's going to be like a Batman Superman movie in the first place is weird. And now they've announced Ben Affleck as Batman.
What?
And, the latest thing is Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, who you may know as Mark Zuckerberg from The Social Network. The guy who is not Michael Cera.
No. Why is Batman in a movie with Superman? Are they? They're just like, wow, Avengers made a lot of money. Is that?
I don't think they know what they're doing with the whole Superman thing. Like DC and General's know what they're doing with their movies compared to Marvel. So they're trying to do a Justice League movie without doing a Justice League movie, I guess.
Disney! Come on now.
Disney's Marvel.
I know. Disney's Marvel?
Yeah.
Go Disney. And I like Phineas and Ferb. Okay. I needed to get that out there.
Oh, goodness.
DC, like, when I was really young, DC were the comics, you know?
Yeah.
And then like, when I was, like, well, I didn't really read, I must say, I didn't really read comics as a kid, but, like, I knew of those characters. And then, all of a sudden, DC wasn't cool anymore, and everyone was Marvel, you know?
Right.
And I don't think DC ever recovered.
Yeah, they tried. The New 52 got them on top for a while, but they've since sunk.
I don't know. I don't know.
We should talk about video games instead. There are Superman video games that have never been any good that I hope they don't remake. Our last audio bonus flashes us way back in the podcast history. Puppy Star Trek for episode 27, PapaCast, How Young is Too Young, released November 18th, 2011. This was actually our first audio bonus recorded after the fact of the episode to elaborate on a specific topic. The secret origins of Sean's video making. That's me. So the hard thing about doing a podcast is that you can't always get all the stuff in that you want to talk about and the time limit allowed, assuming you have a time limit. But we at the dojo want to keep things under an hour if at all possible. And I wasn't really able to tell this story. It sort of dovetails with what Vink was talking about when he mentioned how his daughter is able to see her grandparents every day over Skype, even though she's only met them three times in person. I had a similar situation growing up in the 80s where one set of my grandparents lived in Texas. So we only saw them once every few years unless, you know, they came up and they were getting up there in years and wouldn't make that trip so often. So to ameliorate this problem, in 1988, I believe, my grandparents sent us a camcorder. And this is, you know, being the 80s, it was this huge clunky machine, not like this tiny little handheld things that we have now that are digital and mostly tapeless at this point. Far from being tapeless, it used a, you know, full-sized, you know, regular VHS tape. So what they would do with theirs in Texas was, you know, film things around the house and, you know, just tell stories about the things that they did there and send the tapes to us. And we watch them, of course, and then we'd use our camcorder and send tapes back. And at first, this was mostly, you know, the same kind of thing. Like, imagine like a 7- and 6-year-old trying to put together a video. My parents very rarely themselves actually filmed anything, strangely enough. It was left to us kids to actually manage all this and, you know, plan and direct and everything. So at first it was the same kind of thing, but eventually it morphed into something else. Keep in mind that this was the same camcorder that I mentioned during episode 26 of the podcast that I used to like film the ending of The Legend of Zelda and Mario Paint to save all of my compositions. That was years after all this other stuff started, actually. I had watched an episode of Reading Rainbow, you know, starring LeVar Burton, who at the time was also on Star Trek Next Generation. And I did not realize for some reason that the Reading Rainbow guy was Geordi LaForge. Maybe you know, his visor was a big, good enough disguise for me at the time, so you can kind of understand the Clark Kent thing. Anyway, so having a camera, I wanted to do, you know, some of the techniques that they showed on screen, which naturally gave rise to wanting to do basically my own Star Trek video fanfic. And since I didn't have actors, my sister and I played with pound puppies a whole bunch, and they were like this vaguely anthropomorphic pound puppies that could talk and speak, kind of like Scooby-Doo. I decided to use them as stand-ins for the different characters. So you had Cooler as Captain Kirk, and one we called Spike as Spock. A littler one called Chap that pulled double duty as Chekhov and Sulu for a while, I think. I don't really remember actually anymore. So instead of like sending back videos about life in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, instead we would send back videos of puppy Star Trek. And I think I did around a dozen of these, probably a little bit more. They were my first like really creative outlet that I could make other people watch. So I'd like work on this thing for I don't even know how long, like over a weekend or a week or two. And then I'd finally finish it and then throw it up
you know, on the television to make my whole family watch it. And, you know, being my family, they were very encouraging, of course, and wouldn't tell me what utter crap this was. I think my father stepped in, wanted to participate with me, possibly at the behest of my mother, but also to kind of raise the quotient, the quality quotient of what he was seeing. So we actually sat down and wrote a script first. And then he stood in for Spock and everything, and he let me stay like director of photography and everything, but he like tried to do a little more set design and making things in an alien world look a little more alien, stuff like that. So this is the actual episode that is available online right now on the That's Orange account. So it's linked in the show notes. At famicondojo.tv already, and you can watch it there. It didn't stop there. There was also a feature-length motion picture that was about 114 minutes long, which, you know, based on this experience, also had a script that ran out after about, I want to say 15 minutes, and then things kind of went from there. So that was about 20 years ago that this thing was finished and released. And you know, unlike now that I'm actually like, you know, making internet video, I didn't have editing equipment. You know, we just had, VHS computers, at least, you know, PCs at the time really couldn't handle video editing. These are like $1,000 rigs we're talking about here. There were like these boards you could buy, that would do kind of all the video switching and effects and stuff for you, but they cost hundreds of dollars easily. And my parents never bought me one. So I had to make do with everything that was on the camera. So those like, you know, kind of boom mic on it already. That wasn't terribly great, but you know, there was no alternate audio input. There was no editing. So if there was a mistake or something I had to, you know, do over, you actually had to run the tape back and record over what you had done. More often than not, the mistake would just stay in, and you'd try and alter the scene around it. but since all the editing had to be done by like just basically stopping and starting the camera, I stumbled on like really simple effects. Like if you, stop a camera, move things around in the scene or remove them entirely, you can make things seem like they've jumped or disappeared, because, you know, the background elements won't have moved. And you know, learning later on, this is like a big technique for how to do like green screen, like multiple people, you know, split screen. And things like that I've been using, you know, in actual videos ever since then. So I guess you can credit or blame my grandparents for giving me these tools at a young age and firing my imagination to a point where, you know, even though I wasn't able to do much with it for about, let's say, 15 years, when I finally got back into it, the first thing I did was plumb my archives for Puppy Star Trek, digitized all that stuff for posterity, so to speak. And then started in earnest on more lofty pursuits. And I guess I'll let you guys decide if those pursuits have borne fruit. You know, I was an English major. Keep listening to the Famicom Dojo podcast every Friday, and also the Powercast, which comes out about twice a month. And it was quite a bit longer, but they do a lot more focused things lately. Pretty interesting stuff, like the Masters of the Universe soundtrack or the Star Wars versus Star Trek definitive guide as to which is better. Oh man, that's about 2.5 hours long, but it's hilarious. And the language is a bit raunchier than this show. So since this is a podcast about kids, and what they should or shouldn't be exposed to, you probably shouldn't let them listen to that until they're at least 35. Episode 89, Sean here again. The Powercast is no more, but those episodes and the entire backlog are still live on the feed. Check those out. Plus, No Topic Required, which is the Powercast reformed as an entirely off-topic show. Speaking of alternate movie commentaries, they just recently did one for Die Hard. Check it out. So, that's it for this episode. We've linked all the main episodes, including the original audio bonuses, in the related podcast section of the show notes. If you don't check out the show notes with every episode, please do. In addition to these occasional audio bonuses, we link to the iTunes and Google Play Store fronts to buy mobile games we talked about during the episode, embed videos we may have discussed, or help to demonstrate something that was difficult to do with audio only. Sometimes we even supplement the show with a few paragraphs about something we thought about after the fact. But we also have links to related podcasts or videos we've done at Famicom Dojo, which you should absolutely check out if you want to become a fully rounded Dojo disciple. No future retro or pile of shame for this week. We'll save those for when Vink is back.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo, or YouTube, Famicom Dojo. To leave us a comment, tell us what you think of the show, and suggest topics for the future. You can also call us at 608-492-1923 and leave an audio voice message that we may play on the podcast. If you want to suggest some DLC for the podcast, I think there's still an active donate button for episode 48, but we'll include it in the show notes for this episode as well. You can listen to this podcast on our free iTunes storefront, where you can also rate us and leave a comment. Every little bit helps. This podcast is also syndicated on 4colorrebellion.com and Powit TV. And last but not least, you can hear us streaming on Stitcher Radio. No audio bonuses there, though. If you have friends who drive to work or like to fold laundry, please suggest this show to them. I hear it's good for that. Okay, until next week, the dojo is...
Famicom Dojo.